Hi, everyone. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by my new venture and our newest protein powder, the Pegan Shake. One of the best ways to boost your brain power is with the best nutrition. This is why Dr. Mark Hyman and I teamed up to create the perfect shake to start your morning off right and set your brain and body up for vitality and success. The shake is called the Pegan Shake, and it features a combination of grass-fed collagen, organic pumpkin, and organic pea protein powder with healthy fats from MCT oil and avocado oil, which, by the way, are great for fat burning and fueling brain power as well. A little bonus, the Pegan Shake also features organic acacia fiber, which is great for gut motility and digestion. See, this shake was created to support healthy blood sugar and healthy energy levels. In fact, one of the most common reasons for mood imbalances and brain challenges come from unbalanced blood sugar. Have you ever felt anxious, tired, and wired, and then ate something and felt better? Well, when your blood sugar goes through major fluctuations throughout the day, you literally can feel crazy. I know so many people can relate. So the Pegan Shake supports your blood sugar by feeding your body the right information from this perfect combination of macronutrients. I've been using the Pegan Shake for months, and I feel full, satisfied, satiated, focused, and most importantly, I avoid those energy slumps that come in the late afternoon too. I think you're gonna love this shake. Dr. Hyman and I teamed up to make it because we literally couldn't find a shake mix that we loved. So we decided to create it ourselves. Check it out at getpharmacy.com/pegan shake. You can find the link in the show notes. That's getpharmacy, pharmacy with an F, pharmacy.com/pegan shake. Now on to today's episode. Hi, everyone. Drew Proud here, host of the Broken Brain Podcast. We're all just trying to figure out what this world and this life is all about and to do our best living well at it. At least I know I am. But wouldn't it be nice to have a little help when it comes to recovering from traumas, treating anxiety and depression, understanding spirituality on a whole new level, successfully overcoming addiction, and even reducing our fear of death? Well, research and clinical trials in the field of psychedelics is showing that we can. Psychedelics were the subject of serious medical research in the 1940s to the 1960s, when many scientists believed some of the mind-bending compounds held tremendous therapeutic promises for treating a number of conditions, including severe mental health problems and alcohol addiction. But by the mid-60s, research into psychedelics was shut down for decades. After the blackout ended, the doctor we have on the podcast today, in today's mini episode, was among the first to initiate a new series of studies on psilocybin, the psychoactive compound in magic mushrooms. On today's mini episode, I speak with Dr. Roland Griffiths, a professor in the departments of psychiatry and neurosciences at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Dr. Griffiths' principal research focus in both clinical and preclinical laboratories has been the behavioral and subjective effects of mood-altering drugs. His research has been largely supported by grants from the National Institute of Health, and he is the author of over 360 journal articles and book chapters. In 1999, he initiated a research program at Johns Hopkins investigating the side effects of the classic hallucinogen psilocybin that includes studies of psilocybin occasioned mystical type experiences in healthy volunteers. Psilocybin facilitated treatment of psychological distress in cancer patients. Psilocybin facilitated treatments of cigarette smoking cessation and psilocybin effects in long-term meditators. In this episode, we discuss the therapeutic benefits of psilocybin for the treatment of addiction and how a single dose of psilocybin substantially diminished depression and anxiety in cancer patients. Let's listen in.
Can you talk a little about about psychedelics and the potential for treating conditions in a therapeutic way and some of the studies that you've done? Maybe we could start off with the addiction and smoking, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay. Yeah, so I think it is important that the wisest and most important use right now is for therapeutics, because if we're gonna really unpack these compounds, understand how they work, they have to engage the culture at some meaningful level, and therapeutics is, I think, the legitimate avenue into that. And these are very powerful compounds to approach therapeutic questions. So the two big areas that came out of the earlier studies were addictions and then anxiety, depression, secondary to life-threatening illness. So in terms of addictions, we have looked at psilocybin for treatment of tobacco dependence, cigarette smoking addiction, and that's being done by my colleagues at Hopkins, Matt Johnson and Albert Garcia Romeo. And what we showed was in an initial pilot study of just 15 volunteers that psilocybin in combination with cognitive behavior therapy produced immediate and long duration abstinence from cigarette smoking. So at 6 months, we had 80% abstinence rate biologically verified, which is unheard of in the cigarette smoking area. Cigarette smoking is one of the most difficult to treat addictive disorders there are. Combining this with the intention to quit and the support involved produces these long-term enduring effects. There's we're going on to do comparative efficacy trial with comparing psilocybin with nicotine replacement to look at that more closely. There's other work in the addictions going on right now at NYU with psilocybin and treatment of alcohol dependence. And there's a small study going on with treatment of cocaine dependence with psilocybin. So all three of those appear to be promising, and it fits with the older studies and this idea that these experiences can help rewrite narrative and self-understanding in a way that can be very therapeutically helpful. So if you think about it, someone who's addicted to smoking, you know, will come in and they'll say, you know, I'm a lifelong smoker. I've tried multiple times to quit. I've tried varenicline and nicotine replacement and cold turkey. I always lapse, and I'm addicted. And that's their history and that's their story. And with these kinds of experiences, the experiences are so wide and so big that it appears to pull people out of that narrative. So they're no longer attached to just this locked in, fused idea that they're addicted. They can see the capacity to do otherwise. They can tolerate craving and discomfort in a way that they didn't think was heretofore possible. They can reset life priorities in a way consistent with quitting. So it's really quite astonishing what can happen. And we don't understand fully at the network level what's going on there. I'm framing it in terms of meaning and psychology and cognitive processes, but undoubtedly there's something going on at network functioning brain levels that we don't yet understand. The other big application is in anxiety, depression, secondary to life-threatening illness. And so we did a study that was published concurrently with a study at NYU in cancer patients who were anxious or depressed because of their cancer diagnosis. And we compared a pretty large dose of psilocybin to a very, very low dose of psilocybin in our trial. And again, we show that psilocybin produces these mystical type experiences, but with this transformative quality. But the important point here is that all our measures of clinical distress, that is our classic measures of depression and anxiety, go way down. you know, so much so that about 90% of people 5 weeks after treatment showing clinically significant responses, and about 60% are in complete remission. That is, they don't have any trace of anxiety. And and that holds out to 6 months. So that's actually fantastically interesting. And it's really unprecedented within psychiatry, if you think about it. I mean, this is a single session that lasts, you know, 6 hours at Johns Hopkins, that is producing these enduring effects out to 6 months in a very clinically significant psychiatric condition. So psychiatry doesn't have interventions of that sort. Certainly what we know, you know, the antidepressants, for instance, may take weeks to work, unless it's ketamine that can work more quickly, but its effects die out really quickly. And antidepressants aren't very effective. Psychiatry has, in very severe cases of depression, ECT, electroconvulsive brain stimulation. That's a, you know, a pretty crude but very powerful intervention, but that takes multiple sessions, and it wanes over time. Its efficacy isn't particularly sustained. So what we have is a model here of a discrete intervention that produces these dramatic and enduring effects within psychiatry. And frankly, it looks more like a surgical intervention than it does, you know, a psychiatric intervention. You know, in surgery, you might expect to go in and have a hip replacement and be quite functional, you know, enduringly thereafter. And that may be the metaphor for what these kinds of interventions can bring to psychiatry. Now, to what extent they're effective in different for different medical indications is still open for investigation.
As Dr. Griffiths shared with us, it's clear that psychedelics have been completely under-recognized for their medical potential for decades. Now doctors, scientists, and even world-renowned institutions like Johns Hopkins University are seeing the value in researching the therapeutic benefits that they have to offer. It's especially intriguing to hear that many trial participants feel that their psychedelic experience was one of the most memorable and powerful experiences of their lives, months even after their original session. There's something big here, and I'm excited about all the research like Dr. Roland Griffiths and all the authors like Michael Pollan that are doing their job to sound the alarm that we need to investigate this field further. Thanks for tuning in to this week's mini episode of the Broken Brain Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend who you think will benefit from it. See you next week.